Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Segem, tackling your questions in studio this evening. Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective and Mark du Toit from Courtney Capital Private Wealth as well. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me in studio this evening. Well, it's the ECB that was in focus and the move it's come through with today, no matter how anticipated, I guess, raising the ire of Trump on the other side of the Atlantic, and that not entirely unanticipated either, I guess. He's criticized the Fed yet again for sitting and sitting and sitting, but, the macros when it comes to these two geographies really telling different stories at this stage of the game.
Yes. So, Europe's been in a very difficult economic space for a long time. Really struggling to get any kind of inflation and growth to come through, and the ECB's continuing with stimulus now. And then Trump on the other side of the water. The US economy's been pretty strong, but also slowing. I'm not sure why he's just hammering home the point on the Fed cuts, because the Fed has said that they are going to cut 25 basis points. It's very unlikely that they'll change their mind before the meeting. So, further stimulus and further impetus for the gold price and the precious metals.
Are you on the same boat as far as Fed cut and its dot plot is concerned? Are you anticipating a Fed cut come next week?
Well, I think Powell would sort of have to emigrate if he decided not to do it. But you know what? I have to say this, that Trump is grumpy with everybody, quite frankly, except now suddenly it looks as though he's smoking the peace pipe from
China.
The trade. And I think the reason for that is the Chinese actually pushed back and said, okay, well, we'll just wait for the new administration. We'll let you tip yourself into a recession because you're basically causing a lot of pain for us. But paradoxically, the reason everybody, the Bank of New Zealand, 20 out of 22 central banks, are cutting rates and aggressively and front-loading those rate cuts is because they're trying to protect against the uncertainty around the trade story. Mm-hmm. So truthfully, he's actually created this. But just like he doesn't understand that you put tariffs on, and it's not actually the Chinese who pay it, it's ultimately your consumers who pay it. So he just truthfully doesn't understand the economics around it. But yeah, so I think the bottom line is the Fed is pretty much now being forced, not by Trump, but by what everybody else in the world is doing. And truthfully, there's not a lot of inflation in the system. They're there or thereabouts in terms of their target, whereas the ECB is missing theirs by a country mile.
Yeah.
I think what is missing now, though, is this thought process that QE or monetary policy can solve the problems. It's now up to the bank. It's up to the policymakers and to the fiscal authorities in Europe to take the opportunity that's been given to them and to probably start spending and take over the responsibility for trying to get the economies going.
Absolutely. I want to pick up on the U.S.-China trade talks, because we've had the agreement to postpone the 25% to 30% tariff on $250 billion worth of China's imports, really getting the markets optimistic today. How much optimism has it brought you? Because this is a chapter we've read before.
Yeah, so, it's very difficult from an investment point of view to kind of pick when this will resolve itself. Like you say, we've been going through the tumble dryer. We're at the bottom and then we're at the top, and then they're fighting, then they're making up. And I think, Trump has this, when the U.S. markets are under pressure, he seems to extend the olive branch, and now we're seeing the S&P nearing its highs again, and he's probably going to come back a bit harder in mid-October. If that's the kind of pattern that's been repeating itself. So I think it's important for us to try and just take a bit of a longer-term view and not try and trade the Trump-China discussions.
For now, what all of this is doing is lending quite a bit of impetus to the local unit, the rand, seeing a lot of strength come through, and that as the increasing yield advantage, I guess, becomes more apparent. The Reserve Bank, however, set to announce its interest rate decision on September the 19th. What are you anticipating on that?
I don't think they'll do anything. They moved previously. I think we're at an inflection point. So inflation has been on the right side of the midpoint for a while, let's say. But I think it wasn't long ago that the Reserve Bank, it was November last year, I think, that they hiked. And then said, "Oops, that was a mistake." So I think they don't want to cut and then have to take it back. So I think the SARB, out of all the central banks, again, let me say that my view is that the South African Reserve Bank, the Sitho Kanyako, as a central banker, is doing what he is actually paid to do. The rest of them are playing games and trying to preempt and potentially even in interfering in politics. That's not their job, and it's not their job to fix structurally broken economies.
And he's been pretty emphatic about that. Structurally, we need to see shifts and policy implementation come to the fore in order to address some of the challenges we face on that front. Local economic data filtering through. So let's to wrap up this economic discussion we've had. Mining production increasing by 2.4% year on year in July. A monthly contraction, however, coming through. Your reading of that and what it how it informs, I guess, your GDP outlook?
Yeah, so I mean, we've been watching closely for any kind of green shoots in the South African economy. I mean, there are few and far between at this point. I think what's the next big step for us as a country is the plan for Eskom. So we are all waiting now for the announcement on you know how the huge Eskom debt problem is going to be tackled. And I think that the market will certainly will take direction from the NR Rand in particular too. So if we see a plan that is coherent and achievable and that makes sense, I think it will be we'll see a favorable Rand outcome. And if we get that outcome, then our central bank can actually look at cutting rates and which would lead further kind of a little bit of a tailwind to our South African economy. So a lot riding on the Eskom plan at this point.
Okay, let's take a look at some of the company news that's been filtering through today on the back of that. Aspen, top performer on the top 40 index today, so the market's clearly happy. Question coming through after Aspen results, is it a buy?
I think the short answer would be yes, unless you're one of those who believe that the model is broken or you're one of those that believe it's the ultimate Ponzi scheme, and I don't believe either of those two. So whether you're looking at the reported number of a little over 12 Rand, or their restated headline number of over 14 Rand. Let's put a 10 multiple on it, because that seems to be quite fashionable in South Africa at the moment. That gives you 120 to 140 Rand. I think today's price action was a huge sigh of relief from a lot of people that we, you know, debt to EBITDA is back at 3.6 from 4. But also I think the market's sort of got a very good message at the investment analyst presentation today. You know, a year ago, Stephen Saad was sort of joking and very jovial, and people were saying, hang on a second, you're out of debt covenants, the gears seem to be slipping, what's happening? Today it was both himself and Gus, I think, presented a far more they gave you, I think, a deeper insight into the way they're thinking. And I think also did quite a good job of unpacking the fact that although if you look at certain medicine prices in Europe, for example, although some of their competitors are seeing revenues down 10%, that there's some unique things for Aspen. And the fact that they are actually, they're an AIP manufacturer, they've got the folders, they've got generics, they've got all sorts of things. So I think they did a very good job at just calming the markets and giving them a vision of a strategic future. But I think there were probably quite a few people who were short this thing and were caught on the wrong side of it, and it must have been quite unpleasant for them today.
Yeah. A buy on your side, because the debt story is one thing, and it's cut its debt, yes, 27% over the past six months, but some quarters raising concern about where that growth is going to come from moving forward in order to sustain this kind of momentum moving forward, and others saying that no, at the end of the day, it's the balance sheet and the, how solid a balance sheet at both, that's what matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, I think that today's share price move was really the shorts covering their positions. I mean, there's been a lot of hedges that have been short the Aspen share. I think from a company point of view, those are the two main concerns. I mean, there is very little kind of view of where their growth is going to come from going forward. Organic growth did seem like it was still a decline this year. Which means they have a lot of debt. So they do have cash flow in the shorter term to pay down that debt. Long, sort of a year further out, you do you do battle to see where the future growth is going to come from for mm-hmm. Aspen. So, you know, I think you'll see a nice bounce, but over the coming year, I'm not sure it's one for us to own.
I think at the end of the presentation, I think it was the second last slide, what Stephen was showing, which is around some of the opportunities, and the fact that they have been opportunistic, and they've been criticized for overpaying. And some people jokingly say when they see Aspen coming, they just sort of mark the price up. I think that's unfair. I think also, if you look in the U.S., they've had a couple of important approvals by the FDA. What's also quite interesting is, for example, they were in talks in Europe to try and get somebody who would take the whole Aspen portfolio and effectively take responsibility for promoting it. I think they're looking for something similar in the U.S. So those are interesting opportunities. Mm-hmm. If you have FDA approval to manufacture ampules in Port Elizabeth and they're approved for sale there, you know, if you get economies of scale, which I think is the other important thing, this is not just the case of, you know, you everybody is equal. It's exactly what we saw in the generics business. It became a fight to the, almost a race to the bottom in terms of efficiency. But that's, I think, what they've been doing. They've been building a plant of scale. They've shut certain operations. And I think that, respectfully, is what they do have. And what I found, apart from the 3.62 times coverage ratio, what I found most gratifying was now suddenly China represents 7% of revenue and represented 16% of profit. Of course, there are lots of moving parts and currency translation issues, but I found that very important because they strategically went into China and they've been investing quite a lot. They've got quite a few feet on the ground. That opens those new market opportunities. So I think there is, it's not a case of saying, okay, well, all national health systems are under pressure and they're going to bully the pharma companies. I think these guys are working quite hard to open up new opportunities. But
yeah.
Not to say you can just keep, you know, loading your prices into perpetuity.
Well, a new market opportunity that hasn't entirely paid off is the one Sasol pursued. And a question that's come through is for Sasol, what chemical prices do we need to track that are the inputs and outputs for Sasol's cracker, and where did we track them without a Bloomberg subscription?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a very nice question. So, ethane cracker, basically, your input is ethane, and what comes out the other side is polyethylene. And it's difficult, actually, to track those prices because, I mean, we chatted briefly before the show. I mean, there are contracted prices specifically on the input side. If you want generically to look for commodity-type prices, and that there's a site called Trading Economics, actually, which will give you most of the main commodities, but you won't be able to find the ethane price that Sasol's going to pay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they got I think, which was why they originally were sort of waxing on about how great this deal was, because they were going to have cheap inputs, and that I think there was an assumption that those plastic prices would hold. What does worry me, and I think it's a brilliant question, what worries me is there is quite a lot of ethane crackers being built.
Yes.
in the U.S., in that sort of Louisiana, Texas basin. And I worry, in a world where suddenly plastic straws are no longer it, what's happening to demand on the one side and what's going to happen to supply. Because I remember doing sort of a little bit of research on this way back when they first announced it, or shortly after they announced it. From what I can remember, the current plants that are in process or planned are going to increase or almost double U.S. ethylene and polyethylene output. That's going to disrupt markets a little bit. So I think that question is really well posed because, you know, we might get all excited about, you know, Lake Charles maybe a year out contributing 10 rand of earnings to Sasol, but what's it going to do 3 or 4 years from now? And I think that viewer is very, very well, is asking a great question. Strategically, do you actually want to take a 5-year bet on Sasol? And I think you have to say, in answer to that question, no.
On that note, let's leave it there for now. It's time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back, and it's time to take a quick look at what international markets are up to right now. Stateside, those markets are holding on to the green and as you can see there, the S&P 500 up 0.6%, the Nasdaq higher by a very similar margin, the Dow just over 0.5% to the good. Across the Atlantic in the meantime, more of the same playing itself out, with the DAX trading 0.4% to the good, the CAC 40 trading 0.4% higher as well. The FTSE 100, however, pretty flat, and that despite some support that came through from mining shares like Glencoe and Anglo American on the back of optimism around US-China trade talks, and then BAT as well on the back of an announcement of job cuts being imminent on that end. Within that context, let's tackle more of the stock-related questions that have been filtering through today. Hudeco, why is the share price so low?
Yeah, well, I mean, Hudeco is a smaller cap stock, and we've seen the pressure that the small caps have come under. And it is a South African-based company. So, I mean, our South African economy, as we all know, is in. It's kind of just limping along at this point. So that's probably why that there isn't a lot of interest in the stock at this time.
Okay. Do you have any interest in Hudeco, Graham?
Not really. I think it's been sold down very, very heavily. I think there were a few question marks over governance issues a little while ago. But I think exactly to my point, it's a South African company, very much in the industrial space, applying into the industrial sector, and it's not limping. We're just sort of crawling along or dragging one lame leg behind us. This economy is looking awful. Confidence levels are really low, and I think that's it. A lot of companies have been, like ShopRite, got smashed from 240, to sort of went and paused at 180, 160. Got drilled down to what, just over 110. So there's a lot of negativity now, and I think, you know, at the risk of being corny, everybody always quotes Buffett, but he always says price is what you pay and value is what you get. And I think go and do your research if you like the stuff they sell and make, and you believe in an economic recovery in South Africa, which, let's be honest, is going to come. Companies like that are probably well placed.
Okay, so talking price and value and the metrics you've got to take into consideration, why would fund managers buy stocks like Telkom up to 100 Rand? Most investors were short. Price is now 77 Rand, still above real value.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously somebody saw value in Telkom and was prepared to pay over 100 Rand for the stock. I mean, we have seen it a few times in that you do have offshore investors that have a particular idea or a particular sector that they want exposure to in an emerging market space. And Telkom, they do have some assets which are not fully recognized in the balance sheet. Like, they've got good property assets, there's a plan that they could spin it out as a standalone property company at some point. So, somebody was prepared to pay over 100. I'm not sure most people were short. Those that were short at 100 are now in the money.
And obviously those foreign investors, you cannot ignore. I mean, it's a stock like Telkom that's been impacted. It's a stock like Clicks as well that sits on the foreign investors' radar screen.
Yeah, and I think that's why, if you look at a company like City Lodge, for example, which is one we like, we were buying recently, you look at the share register and it's mainly foreigners. So, you know, when they decide they want to get out of South Africa incorporated or emerging markets, things like that can get hit very hard, but they can bounce back very, very quickly as well. But, you know, I often say that, you know, we sell to foreigners at the peak of the market. We sell them Telkoms at 100 bucks and then we buy them back at 40 Rand, you know, because the South African market is a greenhouse. You've got, you know, Alan Gray and Investec and Coronation, who are not going to sell all their Standard Banks or all their Sasols because they're trapped here. And then when foreigners come in, they completely disrupt the market, and they can do that for an extended period of time. And then they decide they want to get out, and they forget that there's a little bit less liquidity on the JSE than there is on the New York Stock Exchange. And so they say, look, we just want to get out, and the price is irrelevant. So they tend to, in times of extreme volatility, they tend to push our market very, very hard. But that's our view. Take that opportunity and say, well, thank you very much. You know, in a case like City Lodge or ShopRite, which I think is also quite widely held by foreigners, you take your stock from them at good prices, and maybe we sell it back to them in 4 years' time.
Okay. Capitec, in the meantime, I see on Twitter a CPI ex-director sold 500 million worth of shares, but shares went up. More worried about PSG share price and underlying there. Your view on Capitec,
yeah,
and then we'll tackle PSG, I guess.
So our view on Capitec is pretty positive. It's one of the few banking stocks that still has some serious runway in terms of growth. And I mean, directors will at times sell shares and buy shares. It's not always the signal that it's over. And then on PSG, I mean, PSG, you've got to do the sum of the parts calculation. I mean, their main asset is Capitec, but PSG normally trades at a discount to its Capitec shares. And in fact, you can go onto their website and they'll set out the sum of the parts calculation for you.
So. Yeah. And overall, I mean, we had the financial sector performing quite firmly and strongly today. Rand strength, I guess, taking effect, and some positivity this week emerging from the Moody's statement that was made earlier.
Yeah, I think also, you know, the banks had been sold down sort of on this irrational fear of the dark. And then I think suddenly people said, well, hang on a second, you're getting 6% dividend yields. And I think also what Moody's was saying is that the South African banking scene, notwithstanding very anemic growth, is very, very well placed. So I think that helped there. But I think in answer to the question on Capitec, a lot of people, I think, rightly see them as being disruptive. But, you know, Caesar is dead, long live Caesar. Let's not forget Time Bank, Bank Zero, you know, Discovery Bank are all coming, and they're probably going to look to box in that sort of low-fee, technology-driven space. So that's the one caution I have. But having said that, I think the earnings were upwards 19% or 17%, yep. Really good compared to the peer group. But I think it's going to be a tougher time. And remembering that it doesn't have, you know, a very broad suite of services to offer its customer base. So it doesn't have, you know, home loans and car finance and stuff. It's really microloans, credit cards, and transactional banking. So it's probably where the likes of Time Bank are pitching. And if you look at Time Bank, if I'm not mistaken, they're up to over 700,000 accounts now. Mm-hmm. And even the big banks are suddenly offering banking services that compete head on in terms of pricing. So I'm a little bit anxious about that, but in terms of PSG, other pod components like Curro and Stadio have been hurt quite recently.
On the resources front, let's discuss Grindrod's preference shares and Zimplats' preference shares.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the view is looking to buy yield. The preference shares have a dividend yield that they pay, and the most important thing to look at is the underlying company that has to fund those dividends. So, I mean, both cases, I think the Zimplats is now, Impala Platinum is now throwing off cash, so there's no issue from an inability to pay the dividend there. Grindrod also sort of looks okay at this point. It's trading below its net asset value, but the underlying business is kind of, you know, there's no big warning flags or warning signs at this point. So I think both are fine to buy.
Your view on that, Graham?
So I think we like preference shares, but we like basically the big five bank preference because they're offering good yields, and we believe the changes in capital adequacy rules are, or the Basel capital rules are going to make them very expensive debt for the banks. My view is, if you're earning 10% or 9% on big bank prefs, and you're earning a little bit more on these other guys, if you sort of see it as quasi cash, then you should really be investing in entities that you would be happy to invest your cash in. And I'm not sure I would put my cash into Zimplats or into Grindrod. But having said that, I think Mark's point on Grindrod is it's looking a lot better. And I think there are people sniffing around because I think there is a view that asset base is worth more than it's currently trading at. And, you know, you've still got Remgro as a 20-odd% shareholder in that. So they've got some good people in their corner as well.
Okay. What do you do with Blue Label? Buy or stay away?
I think at this point it's definitely stay away from me. I mean, it's purely speculative. A lot is riding on whether they can right the ship at Celsius. Celsius is in quite a bit of difficulty, it seems. Questions around about is it too big to fail, or how are they going to rectify the debt issue. So I definitely think there's way too much risk to buy the stock. And if you're a holder, then you're in a very difficult decision to make. I mean, either you've got to cut your losses or you've just got to hope that you know, there is some kind of light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay, let's shift focus to where you both are glaring at the moment. Let's take a look at your stock picks. And Graham, let's start off with you.
So I'll go with two. I'll go on opposite ends of the spectrum. I've been quite critical of Remgro for a long time, sort of felt that they fell asleep at the wheel. But if I look at it, and both of these, interestingly, are NAV plays.
Yeah.
If I look at it, you know, Mediclinic has run quite hard from sort of 55 to over 65. First Rand RMB is up over 10% from where it was quite recently. And even Distell, for example. So I think it has probably lagged its underlying NAV. And it's one of those companies that gives you optionality, you know. So I think Remgro is one that's probably lagged its underlying portfolio, and I think that discount has swollen too much. And then the other one on the opposite end of the risk spectrum, which may very well be the new Remgro, I think is African Rainbow Capital. Mm-hmm. I'm not disputing the fact that maybe there's a question mark over the Rain valuation, but when you look at the breadth of the companies, they're in agri, they're in fintech, they're in disruptive fintech, they're in phosphorus, they're in all sorts of interesting things. A lot of optionality in things like Alex Forbes and even an RMI. So I just look at that thing and I say it should not be trading at half of its NAV.
Absolutely. And, I mean, what, it's at a discount of, 56% to NAV at the
moment. Yeah, and it's not like, you know, a bunch of clowns running it. There's incredible talent, very, very experienced team, obviously being shown great deals. They've got the BE credentials. They've got great deal-making ability. They've got balance sheets. It's just, to me, if South Africa's going to do well over the next decade, this company has to do well.
Of course, it was a company out with results today and showing, yes, some of the pressure that it's feeling in the local economy, but also the extent to which time is, you know, making pace, I guess, in this very competitive market.
You're talking about
Rainbow Capital. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, also, I mean, you've got to have a bit of faith for this company. There's a lot of interesting parts in it. I mean, the one I think that generates the most interest is the investment in Rain. So, yeah, I think at this point in time, it's kind of a speculative stop from our point of view, but mm-hmm. definitely one to watch.
Okay, not your stock pick. What is?
Yes, yeah, so we're busy playing the Naspers inclusion in the indices. So if you remember, we chose to buy Naspers ahead of the split. So now we're sitting, well, we had our process and our Naspers shares. We sold the process because it's only trading at a 15% discount to its assets. And next week there's going to be a rebalance in the indices, so we expect to see the process to get sold down a bit, and then on the 20th of September, the local stocks are going to upweight the Naspers again. So at that stage, we'll rebalance back.
Gentlemen, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Graham Koerner is with Koerner Perspective and Mark du Toit is with Courtney Capital Private Wealth. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening. Let's take a look at your stock picks. And Graham, let's start off with you.
So I'll go with two. I'll go on opposite ends of the spectrum. I've been quite critical of Remgro for a long time, sort of felt that they fell asleep at the wheel. But if I look at it, and both of these, interestingly, are NAV plays.
Yeah.
If I look at it, you know, Mediclinic has run quite hard from sort of 55 to over 65. First Rand RMB is up over 10% from where it was quite recently. And even Distell, for example. So I think it has probably lagged its underlying NAV. And it's one of those companies that gives you optionality, you know. So I think Remgro is one that's probably lagged its underlying portfolio, and I think that discount has swollen too much. And then the other one on the opposite end of the risk spectrum, which may very well be the new Remgro, I think is African Rainbow Capital. Mm-hmm. I'm not disputing the fact that maybe there's a question mark over the Rain valuation, but when you look at the breadth of the companies, they're in agri, they're in fintech, they're in disruptive fintech, they're in phosphorus. They're in all sorts of interesting things. A lot of optionality in things like Alex Forbes and even an RMI. So I just look at that thing and I say it should not be trading at half of its NAV.
Absolutely. And, I mean, what, it's at a discount of, what, 56% to NAV at the moment.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, a bunch of clowns running it. There's incredible talent, very, very experienced team, obviously being shown great deals. They've got the BE credentials. They've got great deal-making ability. They've got balance sheets. It's just, to me, if South Africa's going to do well over the next decade, this company has to do well.
Of course, it was a company out with results today and showing, yes, some of the pressure that it's feeling in the local economy, but also the extent to which time is, you know, making pace, I guess, in this very competitive market.
You're talking about
African Rainbow Capital. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, also, I mean, you've got to have a bit of faith for this company. There's a lot of interesting parts in it. I mean, the one I think that generates the most interest is the investment in Rain. So, yeah, I think at this point in time, it's kind of a speculative stock from our point of view, but mm-hmm. definitely one to watch.
Okay, not your stock pick. What is?
Yes, so we're busy playing the Naspers inclusion in the indices. So if you remember, we chose to buy Naspers ahead of the split. So now we're sitting, well, we had our process and our Naspers shares. We sold the process because it's only trading at a 15% discount to its assets. And next week there's going to be a rebalance in the indices, so we expect to see the process to get sold down a bit, and then on the 20th of September, the local stocks are going to upweight the Naspers again. So at that stage, we'll rebalance back.
Gentlemen, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Graham Koerner is with Koerner Perspective and Mark du Toit is with Courtney Capital Private Wealth. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening.